And from those discussions, we were able to extract insights on how fundamental the need to support is for creatives. For example, we found that they really need model outputs that they can iterate on. This iterative refinement is something really, really critical to how they shape a game experience or think about shaping an experience.
Hello and welcome to the Data Culture Podcast. I'm Carsten Bange, founder and CEO of BARC, and my guest today is Katja Hoffmann, and she is Senior Principal Research Manager at Microsoft Cambridge. This is a research department that is looking into different topics and advancements in AI, and that's what we're going to talk about. She has developed with her team a new multimodal approach to train Gen AI models. What they were using is pictures and images from games. And gaming, that's what we learn, is actually driving tech innovation for quite a long time, starting from network to GPUs and other things. We'll hear how this works, training an LLM, not an LLM, not a large language model, but a Gen AI model with images. With that, we are expanding the possibilities of Gen AI and get a little bit of a glimpse into the future where not only text, but also images and other types of data can be used to train these types of models. We also talk a little bit how it has been developed in an interactive way and how this could be used in the future. This episode has been recorded in a gondola because we were both attending the Skinnovation Festival in Innsbruck, Austria. And that's why we got this unusual setting. And it was hard to not get distracted by the great views in the mountain. But anyway, I think it's an interesting discussion. Listen in to the future of Gen AI. Bye. Enjoy the episode. Hi, Katja. Welcome to the Data Culture Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
And in a quite unusual setting, we're sitting in a gondola. It's Ski Innovation Festival, and it's a great pleasure to have you here. Mm-hmm. Katja, you work at Microsoft Research in a specific department or area, which is gaming, and that's super interesting. Actually, it's a first. I never had a guest out of the gaming industry. Let's start first with a general question. How is gaming pushing technology, or how is it pushing boundaries?
You're right. I work at Microsoft Research. I lead a team that we call ourselves Game Intelligence. Mm-hmm. And we picked this area quite consciously because we are at the intersection of AI innovation, pushing the boundaries of what's possible and what we can demonstrate. And so we've been in the space for about 10 years and started from kind of the understanding that video games provide this really rich environment for innovation. There, for example, can potentially be access to rich data about complex environments where people do things that they really enjoy. And the kind of quality, variety of data is very different from what can be unlocked with that ease in many, many other settings. So we see this as a really, really fruitful combination where we can push the boundaries. And at the same time, we are in a setting where we can have that dialogue with people in the games industry and get that sanity check of what are the pain points they experience, for example, around AI or users. And we can also use that information to shape our research and direct the outcome of the research, the technology we develop, towards something that hopefully will one day influence and give back to the games industry, leading to exciting new games or maybe better tooling for creatives.
Mm-hmm, interesting. And today, is it all online games? How is that working? I'm not a big gamer, as you can see.
So Microsoft is one of the largest gaming companies. So Xbox, of course, many, many people will know, hopefully many in the audience as well. I'm not too much of an expert on kind of the distribution of what kinds of games, but they cover very, very wide range. Console games, PC games, mobile games.
Okay. And Microsoft just acquired a big gaming company. So that I think that shifted them into
a... I don't think we should be going in that direction.
Okay. And Now I can tell you my experience with gaming. It's already more than 10 years ago, and I was quite impressed, yeah, that you had the online data from gamers. The business model of the game was actually to sell add-ons. Yeah? So people were buying, I don't know, weapons or any type of equipment. And what I found super interesting is that they could already do real-time A-B testing and very quickly adapt to what's working, what's not, and basically maximize their revenue. So, and that in very early stage. So it was my first experience with that. And I thought, hey, wow, there's really something going on here. And they are pushing boundaries in a very early. Do you have any more examples where this is happening in the gaming industry? Mm-hmm. Or what you find super interesting?
Yes, what I'm aware is that gaming and technology has been a really, really fruitful combination for many, many decades. Mm-hmm. I read a book, Masters of Doom, that I really, really enjoyed. It was fascinating because it gave some of the backstories behind how some of the early video games were developed and how technical innovation really went hand in hand with creativity and artists to the point where they were really day-to-day working with each other. Things like multiplayer experiences or 3D graphics were really pushed to their limits by new games that were being developed. And of course, for anyone who is working in AI today and is using GPUs for training their models, we have to be so grateful to the gaming industry that helped push that technology and get it to the point where we could start running AI workloads on us.
Now let's talk about your research. So you are in AI. What are you working on?
Mm-hmm. The project that I'm the most proud of today is research that we just published. My team and our collaborators at Game Studio Ninja Theory developed a new generative AI model, a type of model that we call the Rules and Human Action model. And we released the first instance of this model called Muse in February. Mm-hmm. From the research perspective, the fascinating thing there is that we showed that with a large amount of human gameplay data, we can leverage the kind of technology that is under the hood of ChatGPT, large language models. We can reuse very similar machine learning models and train them on gameplay data that has very different modalities. So we have these models observe the visuals on the screen and the control actions of human players and train them to predict what comes next. Mm-hmm. And from that recipe, what emerges is a model that can very accurately capture the complexity of a modern 3D video game. So 3D geometry, the visuals on the screen, how the game responds to control actions, how characters interact with each other. And it's fascinating to me how accurate that kind of model becomes when trained on an appropriate amount of training data with the right training recipe and the right model architecture.
Interesting. So did I get that right? The training data here is now images?
Images and control text. Actions. Okay. Exactly, not okay. Text. Mm-hmm.
So that's the new approach in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then an LLM is built to predict like the next word, learning out of a corpus of text. So is it right to assume that you are predicting the next picture or the next image then? Mm-hmm. Is that how it works?
Yeah, actually, some of the modeling choices we make are to turn the images and controller actions into something that is as similar to language as possible. So under the hood, we usually call these tokens. Tokens are numbers that represent certain things. In our case, we use a machine learning model that is called an encoder-decoder to translate an image into a sequence of tokens, so into a sequence of numbers. Mm-hmm. And then we also bin the controller actions. And so what you end up with is this long sequence of tokens mm-hmm. that we can feed into the model, and we can simply predict what's the next token in this sequence.
Yeah.
So it's a very kind of basic representation of this multimodal data. And then from the predicted sequence of next tokens, we can again use our encoder-decoder architecture to decode the next image, we can decode the next controller action. And so we can see that the model is able to produce outputs that very accurately represent the underlying dynamics under the hood. So it's fascinating to me that something as complex as that emerges from next token prediction.
So that was not possible before, because of volumes of data and complexity?
We initially thought that the amount of data is really critical to this. Now, in the months since we published the paper, we already started to push the boundary. And some of those directions of where to push came out of really valuable discussions with, for example, game developers, others, the general public, and people who had read about the research. And they asked questions, well, if you need such a large amount of data to train those models, how useful are those? And so we started to push, can we do this with less and less data? And over the past few months, we already found that we can model an entire level of a video game which with much, much smaller amounts of data, days to weeks instead of years. So once you know how to do it, I think it becomes much easier to then understand, okay, what are really the absolute basic necessities? How little data, how small a model could you get away with? And there's a really interesting point where I think training maybe small models and large models, using them in combination, could be really, really interesting and lead to new types of applications in the future.
Okay, interesting. So basically the same discussion we have in large in language models, that also small models are could be quite useful. And now, where is it applied? What do you do with it today?
I want to emphasize that in this journey from research, technology to tools and products, we're at the very research end of the scale. Our remit in my team is to drive innovation and show what's possible in principle. So we have thought about applications. We also worked from the very, very early stages of this research, for example, with game developers, with game creatives, to understand applications. And at the same time, now that it's published, there are more and more possible applications that come out of those discussions. So to briefly step back and focus on the scenarios that we explored early on, those were in the context of game development. So we worked with 27 game creatives, ran a user study to try and understand both the potential of generative AI to support, for example, ideation and early prototyping at the very, very early stage of game development, and to also understand the limitations or bottlenecks. And from those discussions, we were able to extract insights on how fundamental the need to support is for creatives. For example, we found that they really need model outputs that they can iterate on. This iterative refinement is something really, really critical to how they shape a game experience or think about shaping an experience. And they also needed support for divergent thinking. So they need to have models that can create a wide range of outcomes that cover, for example, the wide range of things that might happen from a given game situation. And so we developed our model, we set up the evaluation methodology to very explicitly arrive at models that could ultimately support creative ideation through divergent thinking and iterative refinement. So at this stage, we think we've made a lot of progress towards supporting this. But I do want to emphasize what's currently out there are model weights, a prototype that we call a WEM demonstrator, where people can go and try the models. And so we are continuing this dialogue around where are we today, what are the directions that we're pushing this research in, and what are the kinds of applications that eventually should or should not be enabled through this technology.
Hey there, I'm thrilled about how our Munich Data Festival went in March, and I can't wait for Data Festival online this fall. We built this event because we saw too many AI conferences with lots of theory but little practical use. On October 21st, we are hosting this free one-day online event showing AI working in the real world. And for this, we've gathered experts from top companies to share their actual implementation stories, what worked, what didn't, and tips you can use now. From agentic AI to the data management behind it, everything focuses on real-world applications. I'm excited to see you at Data Festival Online, October 21st, free, online, and practical. Register now at www.data-festival.com. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, game development, I get that. So you support the creative process and possibly speed up the development as a benefit. Do you already have any other applications in mind? I'm just thinking where I see 3D pictures, I could imagine like engineering, like where things are being developed, or architecture, where you also have images. I'm just thinking, do you already also have a few ideas, or maybe even going in some directions?
It's not something we have actively thought about. Through the discussions after the publication, several people approached us and are thinking in that direction. And I'm quite optimistic that there are valuable applications there, especially now as we're seeing how little data might be required for unlocking very specific scenarios that might be enough for those applications. So I'm excited about those. I also wanted to briefly come back to the comment you just made there about speeding up game development. I see the benefit not necessarily as speeding up, but as my hope would be that, for example, a space of game ideas could be explored more broadly. For example, in our study with game creatives, we heard that many of them thought that there was too little time to really spend on ideation and prototyping, which they felt limited the breadth of ideas that they could explore and limited the kind of range of games that could ultimately be considered. Mm-hmm. So I would be extremely happy if one day the technology that we have developed leads to tooling, to workflows that allows creatives to more seamlessly explore a wider space of game ideas, to maybe try out on the fly, hey, how could this feel like? How could I tweak this? And ultimately lead to better games, or even games that otherwise wouldn't have been built.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Which would be a great benefit, yeah, from using AI. Let's talk about the challenges of LLMs that we see today around AI safety, hallucinations. Is that also something you also have to take into consideration when you work on the image side of things?
Mm-hmm. There are many challenges and risks, and absolutely, it's very important to assess them. Not just at the very beginning, but to continuously have a dialogue, because some of the implications, some of the risks may not even be very clear when we start this work. One area that was very much top of mind for us from the very beginning was around responsible uses of AI. So we were in a very lucky position to be able to partner with the game developer who had developed the game, the Ninja Theory studio that developed Bleeding Edge. So we were able to follow best practices to unlock the gaming data in a responsible way, made sure that we onboarded them correctly, anonymized the data that we generated from the replay files that was collected under the terms of the EULA by the game developer. Mm-hmm. So those kinds of things were very much top of mind for us from the beginning. When we published the research, we also found a very wide range of responses, for example, from game developers, from worries to also very enthusiastic and optimistic responses. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so from those discussions, I think there's a lot of value in really understanding where the concerns come from. And one concern or pushback that we found was people who where we hadn't made quite clear what data we were using. And so then once we had that dialogue and they understood of, here is the scenario where we train a model from scratch on the data that was specifically unlocked with the game developer for this purpose, that addressed many of their concerns. So it's just one example of where it's really valuable to think you have to think through as much as you can from the beginning, but then that continuous dialogue is really, really key.
Katja, coming back to the multimodality. So you work now with images, LLMs obviously are well known. What else might be there happening in that space?
Mm-hmm. Even just here in those discussions that we had at the Ski Innovation event yesterday, I realized that for many people, generative AI today is equivalent to large language models and things like ChatGPT. And what I've seen here on the research side is that what's becoming possible is to learn the structure of data across many different modalities. So we've shown what's possible when we train from just images and control actions. We're thinking about what happens if you add audio. And I'm sure your listeners can think about application areas where there might be images or videos and maybe something like the equivalent of control actions in other domains. And I'm very optimistic now about these types of models' ability to learn the complex structure of that data. So in terms of thinking about the future, any startup, any business that has interesting, a novel, maybe quality of data, maybe data that is in very different, seemingly very different formats, very different structures, maybe it's unstructured data. I feel like we're kind of seeing the future of how effective a model of those underlying domains, generative AI models can learn. And so I'm, in a way, very excited about the many doors that can open. Like with our model, many of those applications may not yet be clear. But as we start to develop a better and better understanding of what those models learn, what they're able to predict, how we can then use those predictions in a way that unlocks new kinds of experiences or new kinds of applications, we're only seeing the tip of the iceberg. So there's so many more exciting things that will be happening.
Fascinating, really. So whatever type of data we have, what you're predicting is that AI will be able in the future also to work with that, build models, do predictions, and support many tasks that we might not even think about yet today.
Absolutely.
Super interesting. Katja, thanks so much for your insights, getting a glimpse into the research and what's happening there. And I think it was fascinating to see what else is going on in the generative AI space that's not limited to text just alone. Thanks a lot for that.
This was so much fun. Thank you for having me.